You and I figured out the key. You knew the meth was there. But I want to give Andrew the credit. He's going to be the next chief. A thing like this, it would help him with the guys and the town. A thing like this, it would set him up right. No question, Reacher said. So would you be okay with that? Fine with me. Good. Reacher pushed the door closed against the yowling hinges, and Holland locked it up and pocketed the key. They walked together back to the cars, and Holland pulled his right glove off in the freezing air and offered his hand to Peterson. Peterson snatched his own glove off and shook. Now, listen up, Holland said. He leaned into his car and unhooked his radio mic from the dash and pulled it out all the way until the cord went straight and tight. He thumbed the key and called in an all-points code and spoke. He said, "Ladies and gentlemen, tonight Deputy Chief Peterson broke open what I'm sure will prove to be our country's largest ever drug bust. Start of business tomorrow, he'll be calling the DEA in Washington with the details, and about 30 seconds after that, this department will be among the most celebrated in the nation. He has my congratulations, as do you all. Just another fine night's work in a long and distinguished tradition." He clicked off and tossed the mic on his seat. Peterson said, "Thank you, Chief." Holland said, "You're welcome. But you still shouldn't have come." 11:05 in the evening. 5 hours to go. 1,700 miles south, Plato's three-car convoy waited at an inconspicuous gate in a hurricane fence around an airfield. The gate was a battered, saggy affair, chained and padlocked. The fence was matted with trash and weeds at its base, but the airfield itself was fit for its purpose. It had been military, then civilian, then military again, then civilian again. It had a long runway and hangars and offices and apron parking for hobby planes. They were all lined up neatly, hooded and blinded in the dark by canvas covers. Plato's was not a hobby plane. It was a Boeing 737, the largest craft on the field, by far. It was 20 years old, and Plato was its third owner. Not that anyone knew. Only geeks could date planes, and geeks knew better than to broadcast their conclusions. Plato told the world it had been custom-built for him a year ago, up there in Washington State. In reality, it had been flown to a facility in Arizona and stripped back to its aluminum skin, and the paint had been replaced by a gray-tinted wash that made the bare metal look dark and shiny and evil. People who owed him services regularly spent days and weeks going over it with clay bars and carnauba wax. It was polished like a show car. Plato was proud of it. He was the first in his family to own a Boeing. A dusty pickup truck with one headlight drove around the perimeter track inside the fence and stopped short of the gate. A guy got out and clicked open the padlock and clattered the chain out of the way. He lifted and pulled and swung the gate open. The three-car convoy drove through. Plato was Plato, and Range Rovers were Range Rovers. So they didn't stick to the perimeter road. Instead, they drove in a straight line, across bumpy grass, across smooth taxiways, across the runway, across the apron. They held a wide, respectful curve around the Boeing and parked side by side between two Cessnas and a Piper. The six men climbed out and formed a loose cordon. Plato got out into it. He was in no danger, but it helped to appear as if he was, both in terms of caution and reputation. There was an old-fashioned set of rolling stairs set next to the Boeing's forward door. The word Mexicana was still visible on it, peeled and fading. Three men went up. After a minute, one stuck his head back out and nodded. All clear. Plato went up and took his seat, which was 1A, front row on the left. Leg room against the bulkhead was not an issue for him. The old first-class cabin was intact. Four rows of four wide leather seats. Behind them, economy class had been removed. There was just empty space back there. The plane was rated for 180 passengers, and 20 years ago an average passenger was reckoned to weigh 200 pounds, including checked bags, which gave a total lift capacity of 36,000 pounds, which was about 16 tons. Plato sat while his men inspected their equipment. It had been supplied and loaded onto the plane by a guy who owed Plato a favor. Therefore, it was all present and correct, on pain of death. But his guys checked anyway. Cold weather clothing, aluminum ladders, flashlights, automatic weapons, ammunition, some food and water. Anything else necessary would be supplied at the destination. The pilots had finished their pre-flight checks. The first officer stepped out of the cockpit and waited in the aisle. Plato caught his eye and nodded, like a guy telling a butler when to serve the soup. The first officer went back to the flight deck and the engine started up. The plane taxied, lined up with the runway, paused, shuddered against the brakes, rolled forward, accelerated, and then rose majestically into the night. Reacher rode back to town in Peterson's car. Holland followed them in his own car. Reacher got out at the end of Janet Salter's street and waved them both away. Then he eased past the parked cruiser and walked through the snow to the house. Janet Salter was still up when he walked in. She looked him up and down and side to side like she was inspecting him for damage. Then she asked,
"Successful?"
Reacher said, "So far, so good."
"Then you should call the girl in Virginia and tell her. You were awfully abrupt before. You hung up on her, basically."
"She's probably off duty. It's late."
"Try her."
So Reacher wrestled his way out of his coat and hung it up and sat down in the hallway chair. He dialed the number he remembered, asked for Amanda. She was still on duty. He said, "NO6BA03 is clearly a pharmaceutical code for methamphetamine." She said,